transmitting sound. Download complete. Now launching audio stream. It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Joining us on the show this week is author and house sharing expert Anna Marie Pluhar, talking about the many benefits of sharing a house with a housemate. Living with someone has many advantages, including health benefits, not to mention financial gains, and an added sense of security. We then chat with John Gordon about resistance training and why it should be an important part of your exercise routine. We also get to chat with lifestyle expert Christine Eisner, and Gina Lee of The Love Zone is also here talking about finding love online.
Capture your need for sound.
Living alone isn't always the easiest thing, but living with a roommate can be a downright disastrous experience as well if you're not careful. But it's not impossible to find the perfect housemate. Anna Marie Pluhar joins us to talk about her mission to help those who struggle with being alone, to share tips on what to look for in a housemate, and some benefits that come from having one. Anna Marie, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
It's my pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
So tell me, why do you think house sharing is starting to become more of a popular thing to do?
Well, there's a number of reasons. The first one is that there are many, many more adults who are single. We no longer live in a society where people get married at 20 and live with their spouse for 60 years. So people are single, and housing is expensive, really expensive. So it just makes sense to share the cost of housing by living with one or two housemates, or homemates, as I like to call them.
Why is it that it seems like it's something that we're hearing not just of students doing? Because in the past, you sort of, you know, realize that students, that's what they need to do, and even people in their 20s, but it sounds like it's even people, you know, 30s, 40s, 50s that are doing this.
60s, 70s, I hope.
Awesome.
Yes, I think it's because I think that there are so many more people who are single, whose children have left home or they never had children, so the option to live with family is less likely. We also live in a society where people kind of get so that they expect that adults would live by themselves, but I think that people who are, you know, the boomers getting ready to retire, they lived in communal houses when they were in their 20s and 30s, and they remember that it was fun. They liked having housemates. It was an informal social gathering sometimes. So I think that if people are careful about who they select, they can have a really great experience and save a lot of money in the meantime.
And for people that are older, like 60s, 70s, 80s, I guess this is also like almost like a safety thing as well, because there's two of you or three of you that are there together.
Yes, indeed. It makes my heart hurt. There was somebody in my hometown last year, lives by herself, fell outside her house in the winter. Nobody found her. She died of hypothermia. And one of the things that I think that goes on for older people as they get less strong and capable, that's just part of growing older, is that there grows a little bit of anxiety. What happens if? And it's just underneath the surface, you know? It's like that way that we have where we know that if somebody we know that we love has somebody in their life, we're kind of more comfortable, happier about them, less worried, because human beings need connection. They need being social. I think we're wired for it. It's part of, you know, it wasn't very long ago we all lived in tribes of 50 to 200 people, and it was a safety. Being with other people is a level of safety, and there's a level of comfort. We have research that people who have somebody sleeping under the same roof with them actually sleep better and deeper.
Okay.
Isn't that interesting?
That is very interesting. And can you just sort of give us a bit of a laundry list of the benefits of house sharing? And I know we talked about sort of safety and economic reasons, but I just really want people to get it in their heads, you know, to be really open to the idea of how this can be such a good thing for them.
Okay, so my laundry list is actually the four things. So we've talked about money, and think about it. It's thousands of dollars a year that a person can save or earn if they're doing local housing things, which means that somebody could actually, I mean, even if they're feeling like, okay, I can afford my house and I'm living alone, if they had that extra money, maybe they could go take the trip that they've always dreamed about. You know, it becomes extra cash. Okay, so there's money. This social connection, this business about being able to have somebody that you say good morning to, good night, how was your day? This is a kind of basic social comfort, and it's informal. You see, at least for me, and I think for many people who are listening, if you live alone, you can spend an extraordinary amount of time alone. Because it's hard to just go and hang out with people. You have to be very socially capable to keep making phone calls, keep making plans with people so that you have people around you. So this business of being able to just say, how was your day? It lifts your spirits. And I think people who live with family don't even notice some of these things that people who live alone just live with. And one of my ideas about this is that we know that human beings are incredibly adaptive, basically. I mean, we live in all kinds of circumstances. And this business of being alone, we adapt to it. We just get used to it. And then we get to being so that we're like, oh, no, I couldn't have anybody around. What about I'd lose my privacy? And the truth of the matter is that when you have somebody at home who is a good, I like to say, homemate, you have just as much privacy. That's an interesting thing. But I think that we get the problem of being living alone and not having easy social connections is one that people just get used to. So that's my second. That's a really big one for me, you can tell. Mm-hmm. So my third thing really has to do with the tasks of maintaining a home. I mean, we all have to do that. We have to shovel the snow. We have to mow the lawn. We dust. We clean. We clean out the refrigerator. You have somebody else to help do that. And then for somebody who's older, having a younger person who can easily change a light bulb, as opposed to with difficulty, which is what happens to some older people, or carry groceries in from the store, from the car. That kind of thing is help with tasks. It's also help in cases of emergency. And emergency is not critically emergency, like going away for a weekend and having somebody to feed your cats or cat. Two, what I mentioned earlier, falling down and having somebody who comes home and finds you. So the help with emergencies is another one. And finally is the sustainability. Clearly, people who want to live green and want to live in a sustainable way for sharing a roof, using less of the Earth's resources. So I think those are pretty compelling reasons for trying it out.
Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show this week is author of Sharing Housing, a guidebook for finding and keeping good housemates, Anna Marie Pluhar. For more information on her website and her book, go to sharinghousing.com. Now, can you tell us, I guess, where can people, you know, find places that are open to sharing a house? Like, how do you even start this process?
Well, that's what my book does. So my book starts at the basics with, maybe I could have a state, and starts the process of thinking about that. I believe that, you know, the internet, Craigslist, those sorts of resources are probably the easiest and best ones to use for finding one. What's critically important is that you stop and do some self-analysis about what you must have in your home and what you can't live with, because those are clear guides. You can't live with somebody who doesn't meet those very basic requirements. So for an example, I was interviewing somebody, somebody was interviewing me who said she had a horrible experience. She overlooked the fact that in that house, they leave dirty dishes in the sink. She loved the house. She moved in. But that, for her, became the thing that caused her to move out. It was, for her, a must-have. I have to have a clean kitchen. So there are things like that. And making sure that you interview carefully the person, a potential housemate. My book also talks about what questions you have to ask and what the process can be so that you can be safe. Because, face it, there are people out there you don't want to live with and you don't want to be connected to. So you start out by writing a decent ad or responding to an ad. You have a telephone interview. And in the telephone interview, you find out why the other person is looking to have a housemate. Listen to the reasons. My book talks about what are good reasons and what are bad reasons. There's also some on my blog. And if at that point there's any reason for you to be going, oh, but I don't like this, that's when you cut it off and you say, thank you very much for your interest. This one's going to work out. Good luck. And you hang up. And I think almost all the bad housemate stories I have heard, and I've heard quite a few the last 3 years in my life, comes to the question of how well did you select your housemate? And the answer is always, well, you know, I thought he was a nice guy. Or, you know, he was a friend of a friend. Or we were best friends. I mean, that's another one that happens. Best friends move in, but they ignore that they're not compatible with how they manage living in a home. And very key for me is that even at the point where you're going, okay, this is a great housemate, I'm happy, we've talked about all the things we need to talk about, you have to check references. You have to call and talk to somebody who has already lived with this person and knows them. My own sister neglected to do this. She called me up with great excitement, said she'd found this wonderful housemate, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And I said, did you check references? And she said, oh, no, she's so wonderful. I'm a good judge of character. 6 months later, she couldn't wait for this woman to move out.
Wow.
So you have to check references. But I think that if you do all of those things, and there's a few more things I haven't talked about that is in my book, you're going to have a great experience. I've talked to a lot of people now on my blog. I'm starting to put up stories about people who are living with housemates. And I have a neighbor who's been living with one for 5 years, and haven't actually interviewed her yet, but when I asked her, we will do it. She said, I don't know why everybody doesn't do this.
That's great. Well, where can people get a copy of your book, Anna Marie?
Well, they can get it from my website, which is sharinghousing.com. It's also on Amazon, and it's an iBook and a Kindle. And I'm sure my publisher would be delighted if people were to ask for it at an independent bookstore.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for your time. You've really given us some great tips and advice.
Good. I hope the listeners take me up on it.
That was house sharing expert Anna Marie Pluhar. Again, for more information on her book and her website, very simple, sharinghousing.com.
Capture your need for sound.
Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show this week is one of our team members who helps us out with lots of social media and who is also an avid gym buff, or if you will, John Gordon. John, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So, John, before we start, in the grand scheme of things, I guess it's very fair to say that you are a gym rat, if you will. You are very buff. You are very, very in good shape. I've known you for a while now. And apart from your work that you do for us on the Kelly Alexander Show, you are, you know, you're just always about being in shape and you're always about taking care of yourself. So it's really cool that this week, having you on the show, we're going to talk about some physical training stuff, specifically resistance training. So I guess the first question is, can you tell us what resistance training actually is?
Yeah, sure. So for anyone who's interested into getting into resistance training and wants to know what it entails, basically it's any exercise that causes the muscles to contract against an external resistance. So that means, you know, whether you're picking up something, whether you're pushing something or pulling something, you're allowing your muscles to contract. And when you do this, this will actually if you do this enough times, you know, like if you have a resistance training routine, you will increase your strength, your tone, your mass, or your endurance. And there's also, and the great thing about resistance training is there's many ways to do it. You can either lift weights, you can use machines, you can use rubber exercise tubing, or even your own body weight. So there's many options for people to try it out.
Now, we're going to talk specifically a little bit about women. And should all women incorporate resistance training into their gym routine or their workout routine?
Yeah, I think it's very important for women to incorporate resistance training. I actually spoke with one of the trainers at my gym. Her name is Angela Nashid. She is a certified trainer, personal trainer. And she said that unless advised by someone, by your physician or otherwise, it is definitely recommended that women participate in some form of resistance training regularly to maintain muscle strength, to prevent joint pain and injuries, and to upkeep bone health and bone density. So it's definitely important for women, but also for men.
And for men, is it sort of the same reasons, or there's more to it than that?
No, it's the same reasons, I would say. It's just, I think generally women tend to actually go, they don't like to get into resistance training for certain reasons. Going back to Angela, the trainer, I actually asked her, I asked for her personal opinion, why are women so apprehensive or afraid of getting into resistance training, specifically using weights or machines? And she said that some women are reluctant for the fear of bulking up or, you know, maybe acquiring a more masculine figure. And but she said that this shouldn't be a major concern because women do not have the same level of anabolic hormones. They actually have 10 to 30 times less the amount of hormones than men do. So they definitely won't be able to build as much muscle mass to the same degree as men.
So that sort of is a myth then, because I've heard that for a long time. Like everyone's like, oh my God, I don't want to have massive shoulders. But that's not really what's going to happen to you anyway, unless you crazy want to be some bodybuilding freak.
Yeah, exactly. Women can get big, but they would have to put a lot of time and effort into it. But like she mentioned, Angela, she said for the women who just want to get toned up, when she has them starting out a resistance program, she likes to ease them into the training, and she does this by, you know, doing maybe body weight exercises first. And what body weight exercises are is just using your own body weight. So, for example, you can do push-ups, you can do squats, lunges, or a plank, which is a movement for your abdominal muscles. And, you know, that way women are less intimidated when they first start lifting, just doing their body weights. And then, you know, once they're maybe comfortable enough, they can move into doing more intermediate or advanced stuff using weights or machines.
Okay. And did she say that one is better than the other? Is like free weights better or machines better, or is it sort of a combination of the two?
Right. Well, they both have their advantages and disadvantages. I just to give a few for machine, I would say she and most trainers would recommend machines for beginners because they tend to, you know, show the beginner how to do the exercise properly. They'll guide the muscle and it'll allow the person to do the exercise easily. Whereas dumbbells, they give you more range of motion. And they allow you to just target more muscle groups. But of course, at the same time, the dumbbells, they also, you know, you need to have more experience with them because if you do use heavy weights, you can get injured. So in that case, going back to the machines, it's maybe better. But at the same time, like I mentioned, machines can only give you so much motion.
Okay. And so essentially, though, it is sort of to build yourself up. So start with your own body resistance and then maybe move on to the machines and then go to the dumbbells, maybe in that order.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, you can do that.
Okay, perfect. Now, when it comes to men and women, I think you spoke a little bit about the benefits, but in your opinion, what do you think the benefits are, like, long-term?
Yeah, so like I mentioned, benefits before, just building muscular strength, preventing joint pain and injuries, just to upkeep bone health and bone density. But I think one really great benefit that people tend to not realize for both women and men is the fact that resistance training can increase your metabolism and, in fact, help you lose weight over time. And I think that for women specifically, they want to usually lose fat and weight. And so one way they can do this is through resistance training. And what they need to understand is when you build, the more muscle you build, muscle is actually, it's called an active tissue. And that means that it's constantly working and it's constantly expending energy. And so you're actually losing weight while just resting. So there's actually two ways that we can, you know, measure the way we lose weight. And there's your basal metabolic rate, which is how much energy, how much weight you're actually losing by just resting. And then there's, of course, that's your energy you expend when you're doing exercises. So if you combine both the basal metabolic rate, which is when you're just resting, and also the energy that you're doing when you're working out, you can actually easily calculate how much weight you can lose. And of course, if you want to lose weight, you have to actually expend more calories than you actually consume.
Gotcha. And something that should be noted about you specifically, like I know you've gotten more into cardio in the last little while, but as I mentioned before, like I've known you for a while and you know, you are quite buff and in good shape and sort of tight and ripped and all that sort of stuff. And you did that mainly through weights, right? Like you didn't do a lot of cardio to begin with, even though I know now you're trying to be more well-rounded.
Right. Yeah, no, I definitely think it is important that everyone does have an overall well-rounded physique, or, you know, they definitely, you know, like any trainer will recommend, they'll tell you, you should do between 4 to 7 days of cardio, 4 to 7 days of resistance training, but also 4 to 7 days of flexibility training, which is just stretching your muscles before and after the workout in order to, you know, prevent injuries and just to make sure that you're doing everything properly.
And how should someone go about starting a resistance program? Should they consult someone like at the gym, like your friend, the trainer?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, Angela Nash, yeah, she highly recommended that that someone consults a professional before taking up training on their own, especially if you're new to resistance training, because a personal trainer like herself will educate the person on the form on how to do the exercises properly, how they're supposed to feel, and where they're supposed to feel, you know, the muscles working. So yeah, she highly recommends that you work with a professional trainer.
And in your experience, John, again, because you have been working out for a while, doing the weightlifting for the resistance training for a while, can you just give an idea about how long before you started to see results? Because I know it's easy to get sort of caught up in that, but it is also good to have some results so that it inspires you to keep going.
Right. Well, what's so great I find about resistance training, especially for people who are new with and have never done it, they'll actually tend to notice results within weeks, if not a few months, which is really not that much time, you know, because their body is not used to exerting all that energy and all that strength. But once it's introduced to that, it kind of shocks the system. So they'll actually notice some results pretty quickly. And then, of course, over time, once the body gets used to it, or when when it plateaus, that means it's gotten used to all the resistance training. You just have to basically go into progressive overloading, which means, you know, increasing the weight, thus challenging your body again, and it'll, again, grow in time.
Fantastic. And John, do you have any sort of tips or advice that you would like to leave the listeners with, again, as someone who does this, you know, on a weekly basis?
Yeah, I would say for anyone who's looking who wants to get into resistance training, is just, you know, have fun doing it, because I think the most important thing is when you're doing any type of exercise, whether it's cardio or strength training or flexibility training, you got to enjoy doing it. If you're not going to enjoy it, then you're not going to be motivated to do it again and again. So you definitely want to, you know, find something that you enjoy. Especially, you know, in times of like the winter when you can't really go outside, just be creative, talk to trainers. They're there to help you. They want to help you as much as they can. Also, if you're interested in getting any fitness advice or tips, you can actually contact Angela Nash at afitnessbyangela.com or any other trainer that you know. And yeah, they'll definitely help you out.
Fantastic. John, thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
That's John Gordon, again, a member of our social media team here at the Kelly Alexander Show, and also an avid gym goer, if you will, and definitely someone who takes care of themselves. So he's got some great advice. And John, before I let you go, just quickly, how can people reach you on Twitter again?
Sure. It's at JON_G87.
Awesome. Again, John Gordon right here on the Kelly Alexander Show.
Stand by.
The Love Zone
with Gina Lee
on the Kelly Alexander Show.
I'm Gina Lee, and today's topic in the Love Zone is about computer love. There was once a time when online dating was seen as a last resort for creepy people who couldn't find a way to meet mates in real life. Now, much of the taboo is gone from the online hookup. As the popularity of social networking sites grows, online dating is now seen as normal for the most part. It's not a big deal. It's also big money, with countless dating websites jockeying for the memberships of those looking for love and liaisons. A quick Google search will turn up dating sites for all kinds of folks, from cat lovers to cooks. If you decide to dive into the online dating pool, here are a few things to keep in mind. Perfect your profile. The upside of online dating is you have access to a much larger group of potentials, but it's very easy to get lost in the masses. So when completing your profile, you have to do it with the aim of standing out from all the other fish in the cyber sea. Sounds like you're about to submit a job application, doesn't it? But don't worry, it's not as hard as it seems, and you'll most likely have fun doing it. Many dating sites make it real easy by giving you pre-prepared forms where all you have to do is select the attributes that best describe you and the mate you're looking for. Some make you fill out questionnaires that will tabulate all your answers into a personality assessment, which will then be matched to other members who may be compatible with you. The whole process of setting up a profile can even illuminate a few things about yourself that you didn't know. How often do we get a chance to sit and write down what we're specifically looking for in a mate? Not to mention having to analyze yourself and pick out the qualities that you think make you a good catch. Would you date someone like you? But I digress. Back to the profile. So you filled out your age, height, body type, and profession. Now it's time to get that profile popping. Here's another P word for you. Picture. Yes, the one that'll say 1,000 words. The pics you put on your profile will say a lot about you, so be sure to post up the ones that not only show your good side, but your personality. Action shots are great, but don't be too staged with it unless you're going for the comedy effect. And hey, everyone likes someone who can make them laugh. Now comes the write-up. That's where the challenge really comes in. How to be interesting and appealing with your words. How to make that impression that will prompt a potential date to click your link. This will take a bit of time, but again, it can be fun. This is where you make your wish list, your declaration of standards and expectations, and what kind of adventure someone can expect to have should they choose to get on the love train with you. If you browse other profiles, you'll get a lot of great examples of what can appeal and what can repel. Everyone has their own writing style, so I'm not going to tell you how to do that, but my advice is to just keep it positive, specific, and uniquely you. Online dating can be a whirlwind of an experience. It certainly makes it easier to meet people, but once you do, all the rules of dating still apply. You'll have to get to know the person, see if the chemistry online continues offline, and whether things can go further than an instant message. If you're looking for a serious relationship, it's still going to take work. Sorry. I have heard both happy stories like getting engaged and horror stories like getting stalked from people who've tried online dating, but that's dating in general, isn't it? No matter how you met, you're dealing with human beings, and they're much more complicated than a computer. So if you're surfing for love, be safe, be selective, and be real.
Let me set it off in the right way. You got a banging booty and a tight waist. I've been a fan since I met you in the lobby. And hopefully you end up over my place. I can't believe I never saw you coming over until you put your pretty hand up on my shoulder. I wanna touch, I wanna kiss, I wanna hold you. Yeah, I really wanna get you high tonight.
Come on.
So tell me what I gotta do to get the hook up in the future. Baby, you choose the night, whatever you like, and I'ma pick you up on time.
And it's cool if you don't want to, but you'd be a fool if you don't want to. Because I guarantee that if you're with me, you're gonna be feeling how you're supposed to be.
Girl, give me your number.
Give it to me.
Forget it, here on my number.
Here you go.
Forget it, you don't need my number.
No, you don't.
Because we're gonna get hot tonight.
Ooh, girl.
Girl, give me your number.
Give it to me.
Forget it, here on my number.
Here you go.
Forget it, you don't need my number.
No, you don't.
Because we're gonna get hot tonight.
And if you say you don't like it, my.
If you say
don't like it,
no matter
we can do it.
later. Hit the hook up in the future. You choose the night, whatever you like, and I'ma pick you up on time. And it's cool if you don't want to, but you're a fool if you don't want to. 'Cause I guarantee that if you're with me, we're gonna have a good time tonight.
Give me your number.
Yeah.
Forget it, here go my number.
Here you go.
Forget it, you don't need my number.
Forget you don't.
'Cause we're gonna get hot tonight.
Right. Come on, girl.
Give me your number. Forget it, here go my number.
Come and get it.
Forget it, you don't need my number.
Forget it, you don't really need it.
'Cause we're gonna get hot tonight.
Can we break it down? Baby, can we break this down? Can we break it down?
Yeah. 'Cause we're gonna get hot tonight.
Can we break it down? Can we break it down? Can we break it down?
'Cause we're gonna get hot tonight.
So get your hands up.
Seen a lot of shorties in the club tonight.
You
the only shorty I'ma love tonight. The one and only woman that I'm faking up. So come on over here, let me show you some love. Girl, I wanna get you real hot tonight. See if I can love you nonstop tonight. Wanna make you feel like you feel alright.
'Cause we're gonna get hot tonight. Girl, give me your number. Forget it, here go my number. Forget it, you don't need my number. 'Cause we're gonna get hot tonight. Girl, give me your number. Forget it, here go my number. Forget it, you don't need my number. 'Cause we're gonna get hot tonight.
Let me see.
As much as we love the idea of coming together and living with our mate, it can be a challenging process to merge those two worlds together. And even after you're married, you never know what's going to happen. To help us understand how to make the transition much easier is lifestyle expert and author of Comfort Living, A Back to Basics Guide to a More Balanced Lifestyle, Christine Eisner. Christine, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Christine, I think a lot of couples, you know, get caught up in the romance of moving in together, but then forget that there's a harsh reality that they are indeed merging two tastes. What is the first step a couple should do to make, you know, things start off on the right foot?
I love the fact that you're doing this topic because so many people have this idea, as you say, that everything just sort of magically comes together and, you know, there's going to be a place of honor for his collection of racetrack shot glasses and also for her wonderful portrait of her great aunt, you know, Marie. And, you know, sometimes when it gets down to those concrete aspects of setting up home, it's not as easy as you think it might be. One of the things that I think is the most important, and it really is at the foundation of comfort living, is the idea of really focusing in on your own wants and needs. And when you are a couple, the important thing is to help the other person understand that. Because all of a sudden, if his shot glass collection, I'll go with that example, if you understand that his shot glass collection are memories, that each glass is a memory of a different experience, then, you know, it becomes more than just a collection of shot glasses. And, you know, the same thing, if he understands what her relationship is with this aunt, then it just helps. So I think that's really the first step in the process.
And, you know, I think, Christine, a lot of women get caught up in the notion that they are the keepers of the household and that what they want, you know, sort of design-wise, lifestyle-wise, is what should end up happening in the home. What do you tell women so they sort of take their mate's taste into account?
Well, you know, I say a lot of times people think that the house is the woman's or, you know, whoever is that person at home. And then, you know, men end up creating, you know, the ever increasingly popular man caves, whether it's in the garage, whether it's in the basement or, you know, or maybe they get a study. But I think really, you know, women need to create space for themselves too. Instead of sort of generally having the whole house, I think women need a she cave. And I think if she has her place and he has his place, then the rest of the space becomes more open to both of their inputs. So, you know, that's a key part, and I think it's this everything but the garage is for her actually ends up doing people a disservice.
And with regards to that, Christine, how would that work? Because for example, let's just say there was no garage for his stuff and there's like only one sort of extra room. Like, how do you decide who gets that? Or can there be like it kind of split down the middle?
Well, I think, you know, it could be a shelf. It could be a wall. It could be, you know, it doesn't have to be a room. I mean, especially because not everybody lives in, you know, in big houses. So it can be, you know, the equivalent of an altar, you know, of a little special place where his collection is, where his sort of, you know, treasures, I call them treasures. In Comfort Living, I basically am giving the readers, giving people a new language for talking about quality of life. So it really isn't about, you know, square footage. It's about meaning. And actually, there's a wonderful exercise that's in my book, and you have a copy too, so feel free to put it on your website or whatever. But it's on page 16 of my book, and basically it's a grid of words, and I use this with couples and families and individuals, and it is amazing what it does. But I ask people to just circle the words that describe how you want to feel in your space. So it might be friendly, traditional, stimulating, casual, vibrant, glitzy, romantic, whatever. And, you know, he'll circle his words, she'll circle her words, and of course they're not going to be the same, but it's really amazing because when I work with couples, you know, I help them focus on the words that they have in common. And so all of a sudden, it, you know, that drawing a line in the room isn't as important, because if you start to have an understanding for where the other person's coming from, what they want, like if a guy wants a room, you know, wants to feel like he's in a masculine space, well, you know, if she really understands that that's an important thing to him, then you end up coming up with these opportunities to gift the other person. And it's like, you know what, I'm going to choose this kind of a frame around these photographs, or this kind of a rug, or this kind of fabric for the you know, the throw pillows. And all of a sudden, just because of being more aware of each other and where you're coming from, those, you know, that you end up not on opposite sides of the net, you end up on the same side of the net, and it makes a huge difference. I see it time and time again with people I work with.
I have to ask you about something you brought up just a few moments ago with regards to the space. And you said, you know, certain couples don't have a lot of space, and that, you know, if they do just have a shelf, it's enough for them. Is it because of the fact that it is their shelf, they get to put whatever they want on it, so that's what will give them sort of peace of mind? Because I think everybody growing up, especially if they've grown up in a family where, you know, they've had to share a room with someone else or whatever it is, or, you know, even being in university and being in cramped quarters, when you do get that house or you do get that larger apartment, I think we all just wish that we could have that man cave or she cave to put all our stuff. But you're saying that just a small space, it can work.
I think it absolutely can work, because I really don't think it's about stuff. I don't think quality of life is about stuff. I don't think it's about how expensive something is. I think it's just about these messages that objects and elements and memories can give us. And, you know, sometimes people that are in big sprawling houses, I think it's actually easier to get lost. It's easier to become less intentional about how you set up your surroundings, and more importantly, the routines that you do in where you live or where you work. So in a way, the person who has the small apartment and can just carve out a little corner of a room, or, you know, the night table, or, you know, a mantle or a shelf, or a, you know, objects on a tray, you know, on a side table, that can end up being actually even more powerful than trying to do it in a whole house, because it can get a little bit, you know, diffused.
Joining us on the show is lifestyle expert and author of Comfort Living, Christine Eisner. Make sure to check her out, www.comfortlivingbychristine.com. How do you amicably decide who gets to keep what? Because I think, you know, a lot of guys would want to, you know, ditch her rose petal painting, and you know, the women might want to get rid of those peewee trophies, you know, throw them in the trash. Where is the happy medium, Christine?
Well, I think you have to be respectful and considerate of where each person is coming from. And again, if you approach it, the exercise that I talked about is incredibly helpful. And in communicating on what are the things that mean the most to you, if you know, we can't have, you know, you can't combine two lives into one life or one and a half lives and not have some things go by the wayside. So I think it's really important to communicate the things that are most important, and then maybe they can come together. You know, if that painting is not the most important thing to her, well, then that's something that can go by the wayside. If it is important to her and he absolutely hates it, well, then maybe there's a place, you know, on her side of the bed, in her side of the bedroom, or maybe there's a wall in the bathroom where, you know, her sink is, so that she can see it every time she brushes her teeth. And it's not necessarily relegating it to the bathroom, but it actually is putting it in a place where, again, I talk about the routines, where it becomes part of the routine that is her life, not necessarily that is his life. So I think that you need to see, you know, you need to talk about where do your eyes go, and try to put those things in places where they're going to be touching the person who they mean most. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and a question I would have for you too is, I almost feel like, you know, if you are merging two worlds, it's almost an exercise as well of self-awareness, because I feel like if you, you know, like you said, you have to be understanding of your partner, and there is that happy medium where, you know, some things will probably have to go by the wayside. Do you think as a person, you need to become less defensive? Because I think a lot of people, you know, for example, you know, for me, I have all these karate trophies that I've acquired since I was 6 years old. And I'm sure some of them, or some people would think, you know, what the hell is she still doing with these things? But, you know, for me, they represent a specific day, a specific combat that I did. So they mean something to me. And I can't imagine parting with any of them. So how would I sort of work with that if someone else was like, what the hell is that?
Well, you know, I think we all, there's a word that I use called streamlining. People talk a lot about decluttering, but what streamlining is about, it's about getting rid of the obstacles in your life, the things that get in your way, but it's also about recognizing the things that are important to you. And I think that we each need to own up for our own treasures and our own obstacles before we get into the conversation with the other person. You know, so you have come to that conclusion that those are really important to you. You don't want to have him tell you something that is or isn't important to you when you haven't even figured that out for yourself. So I think that's a really important part of the process. Don't let your mate do the dirty work for you. You know, we have to step up to each of that that process on our own. But then, in the case of those trophies, I've done this with my son, who has a lot of, he was a karate person too. But, you know, there is I created in his room, because they're now not part of his active life, but, you know, they are treasures, and they're bridges to a place that he was at in the past that was important to him. So I actually put up a shelf all around his room, but about 12 inches from the ceiling.
Oh, wow.
So it basically is a high shelf that's out of the way, but that is visible. And so you could put that into a place where it meant something to you. It could be in, you know, it could be just on one wall. But so it could be up there out of the way, or it could be just a shelf that you say, this is an important place, you know. And depending on how much of your presence you want it to be in, you either put it at, you know, right at eye level, or maybe you put that kind of a shelf around the perimeter of your closet. You know, the closets don't necessarily go all the way up to the ceiling, so maybe there's a way to store them, but in a way that respects them too. So those are some ideas as to how you might do that. But I do think it's really important, and that's where this recognizing what your treasures are and writing them down, both of you, writing them down, and you'd be surprised how someone says, "Wow, I didn't realize that was that important to you." And then all of a sudden you hear them saying, "Well, if that's the case, then maybe we can do this." And this is him speaking for your karate trophies. And it really is. And then in turn, you're saying, "Oh, you know, I didn't realize that those, those matches, my husband came into our marriage with a whole big thing of matches from different restaurants. Well, we started to use them instead of them just being in a place. I've actually put them in different places around the house, and gradually we use them." 25 years later, we're now on to new matches.
Wow, that's amazing and a great tip. And another area where I think, you know, things can get contentious is deciding on, you know, furniture versus electronics. You know, the man probably wants the flat screen and she might want to go with, you know, a coffee table or an armoire. How do you work that out, Christine?
Well, you know, I think that that's, you know, a matter, I mean, you know, most likely you don't have the money to do both at once. And so I think it's just sort of a, you know, a taking turns of working again. If there's a respect for the process, if it's not the only thing you'll ever be spending money on, then, you know, then maybe it's, well, you know, maybe we really need this to maybe the coffee table is really important because it creates a, what I call a campfire, a center of energy that draws you in. And if there's nothing there, then, you know, then you have something that's taking away from the comfort in a room. So if he understands why you want the coffee table, then maybe it becomes easier for him to say, you know what, you're right. I really don't have anywhere to put my feet or my drink or whatever. And you know, if you like that coffee table, great. But then she might say, well, you know, what kind of coffee table would you like? And, you know, so that might be how that discussion happens. If it ends up being the flat screen TV, then, you know, maybe if she has a little bit of a say in it, or maybe it's just that point where she says, you know what, sure, just go with it. But again, I think when you tap into the other person, instead of like digging your heels in the ground and saying, we're getting a flat screen TV and that's it. Well, you know, I mean, we're humans. I mean, I don't know about you, but I would dig my feet in on the other side.
And I'd say,
well, then I'm going to go spend the money on the coffee table. And then, you know, you're broke. You can't pay the rent.
And you know, it's funny you brought that up, you know, because if there is, a real power struggle that's going on, Christine, is that when, you know, the couple should call in someone like yourself so that, you know, World War, you know, 14 doesn't break out? Because, I mean, you would hope that each couple could sort of work it out on their own. But, you know, if it's two strong personalities, one might not, you know, either of them might not be willing to back down.
It's a really good idea to call someone in because, you know, it's amazing how quickly, I mean, I'm talking about 20 minutes, a situation can diffuse. I mean, I worked with a couple and it was obvious that they were, you know, she was moving into his decorated bachelor pad and she was about 20 years younger and there was really no room for her. And I could sense that they were, some people sort of say, you know, you're sort of a house whisperer. I was like, well, more a lifestyle whisperer. But it was very easy to see that they were in pain about it. And, you know, I had them do the exercise. We talked through it together. I had them, you know, put down list their treasures. And all of a sudden, the whole tone of things changed. And the cool thing was that, you know, years later, you know, it was not a quickie kind of fix. It was something that they carried with them because they had a greater awareness of who they were and how they fit together and what they could do for each other, you know, most importantly.
And I wanted to ask you about, you know, something that I was reading over with regards to your information on your website. What's an energy center, Christine? And is that something where, you know, the couple is making memories together? Is that how that works?
Well, a campfire, if you think about a real campfire, you know, there's light, there's warmth, and I don't know about you, but it's impossible not to be drawn into the feeling of that gives. And this is basically it is a center of energy, and it's a center of energy that creates a sense of connection and warmth, as opposed to like a focal point, which is something that you look at arm's distance, across a room. A campfire is like a shawl; it just wraps around you, and that is what I mean. That is a center of energy. And so, if you come home to, you know, to a house, and you walk, or you know, you walk in, and there's already a lamp lit and inviting you in, and the tables, you know, there's a two-place setting set. I'm speaking couples. There's two-place setting set. And, you know, a candle and some matches on the table, and you've got the CD and the, you know, or not, forget even the music. You have a clue of what's for dinner. Maybe you went out in the morning and you saw that you had eggs, and so you think, okay, well, we're going to have, you know, we'll have breakfast for dinner tonight. That is the kind of, and the light turning on is because you've put a light timer on it. to turn on before you come home at night. That is what you've done, is you've created a center of energy, a campfire that draws you in for some meaningful, for a feeling of comfort and joy and meaning at the end of the day. That, if you contrast that, you know, this warm glow of, you know, and the feeling that you're being received by your home, contrast that to coming in, the house is dark, you open the fridge, you know, nothing talks, nothing speaks at you, you end up pulling out something, you know, milk and having a bowl of cereal while you're standing by the sink. That's the difference between a center of energy that really welcomes you in and coming into to just a skeleton of a structure instead of a real home.
Christine, you've been fantastic. Thank you so much. And I have to ask you, where can people get a copy of your book?
They can get a copy of it on my website, which, as you said, is comfortlivingbychristine.com. And it's also sold through Amazon and Barnes & Noble.
Oh, that's amazing, Christine. Thank you so much. I really appreciate that, and I really appreciate your time today. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's Christine Eisner again, a lifestyle expert and author of Comfort Living. Check her out, www.comfortlivingbychristine.com.
Bring on the
remix.
Remix.
Thank you so much for joining us on the show this week. And as always, a big thank you going out to my guests this week, Anna Maria Pluhar, John Gordon, Christine Eisner, and the always amazing Gina Lee. Here's your thought-provoking quote of the week, this time coming from Fyodor Dostoevsky. It's not miracles that generate faith, but faith that generates miracles. Don't forget to find us on social media on our website as well, KellyAlexanderShow.com. Also on Twitter, @KAlexandershow. Our YouTube channel, YouTube.com/KellyAlexandershow. And on Facebook, Kelly Alexander Show. If you have any comments or questions, just drop me a line, Kelly@KellyAlexandershow.com. Have an awesome week. You and I'll chat soon.